From the secrets we keep to the lies we tell ourselves, get ready to challenge the status quo and dare to ask the questions others are too afraid to ask. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Join Francesca as she ignites a meaningful conversation about things that really matter. Buckle up and get real. Now, to give you something to talk about all week long, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. You know, with Mother's Day right around the corner, it seemed like this would be a really good topic to delve into tonight. While most mothers say they want to protect their daughters, but what happens when protection turns into silence, anxiety, or control around sex? So if you're a parent or a grandparent of a teenage girl, chances are you've had at least one moment where you didn't know what to say or avoided the conversation entirely. We can't control every choice our daughters make, but we do shape how they understand themselves, their bodies, and their relationships. Teenage girls are learning about sex whether we guide them or not. The question is whether we're part of that learning or leaving it to someone else. Maybe the real work isn't getting it perfect, but being willing to stay in the conversation, even when it is uncomfortable. So tonight we're talking about this complicated, often uncomfortable reality of raising teenage girls in a sexualized world and what they're actually learning when we're not part of that conversation. My guest tonight is Evelyn Resch. She's a clinical social worker, certified sex therapist, nurse midwife, and author. She's the co-author of The Secret Lives of Teen Girls and author of Women, Sex, Power, and Pleasure, Getting the Life and Sex You Want, which we'll talk about in the second segment. Welcome, Evelyn. So glad to have you back with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to have been invited. Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're going to dive right in. And my very first question to you would be, what are you most afraid of when you think about your daughter being sexually active?
Well, based on my years in practice, the response that I hear from most mothers is, I'm afraid she's going to get pregnant, and I'm afraid she's going to have her heart broken.
Aww.
Those are the two concerns that I hear most often. And these are interesting assumptions because this isn't necessarily the outcome of being sexually active. So it's a very curious idea that people come up with, and it's almost reflexive. And I suspect that part of this is related to that mother's experience.
Well, usually,
when she
right.
was a similar yeah. age. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that one. I mean, it's just, isn't that just natural that that would be the case?
Well, yes, except that what it reflects and what it definitely implies, and certainly what I infer from it, is that people have a very confused concept between facts about being sexually active and values about being sexually active. Those two things are not the same. And when we're educating our girls about sexuality, we often get these things muddled. So, for example, having your heart broken, possibly. However, there's also kind of a list of potential benefits to having sex when you're not emotionally attached to the person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, no one
Some mothers listening might be cringing right now.
They probably are, yeah. But, you know,
I know my mother's rolling over in her grave right now, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know. There are probably plenty of mothers rolling over in their graves at the moment. But, but it's true. And the other issue is that, yes, approximately 50% of all pregnancies in the United States are unintended. So there's a high risk of that. But people can have an unintended pregnancy even when they're contracepting and they're using their contraceptive method correctly.
That's exactly
the
right.
Other,
yeah.
Yeah, the other interesting piece of this is the implicit idea that pregnancy prevention is really the sole responsibility of women. It's very rare that we really integrate men's participation in this or their skills to be preventative into mm-hmm. these conversations. You know, we just assume that women have to take responsibility for this. And this is something that I really object to and that I try very hard in my practice to bring to the surface.
Well, I'm not so sure I would necessarily see that as an issue because, after all, it is the woman's body. And ultimately, if she does get pregnant, she's the one who's going to have to carry the baby or make a decision whether or not she's going to bring the pregnancy full term. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a young girl anymore, but I know that in my younger day, I would never ever have thought about putting any responsibility on the guy. It wouldn't have occurred to me. It's my body. I don't want any accidents. And I ended up having an accident, actually. I was just, let's see, I think it was 21, 22 years old. And I got pregnant. And yet I had used a diaphragm. And
there you go.
But what ended up happening, and I do say thank God, because I don't think at 21 years old, I don't think I was prepared to be a mother. I don't know. I wasn't even an adult yet, really, in many, many ways. But anyway, it did end up being an ectopic pregnancy. So the tube ruptured. And so that was that. But, you know, I still remember going to the doctor and saying, how could this possibly be possible? This is impossible. I used birth control. And I bet you there's women, you know, and girls who use the pill and get pregnant. So, you know,
absolutely.
nothing is 100%.
No, except a same-sex partner or complete abstinence.
Right, right.
From intercourse, right. Anyway.
But I do remember after that point that I decided I was going to go on something a little sturdier than the diaphragm and also would have the man protect himself as well. So it was like, I don't even know how we had any sensation with all that was going on down there with all the birth control.
Well, you know.
But I was going to make damn sure that that didn't happen again. And not that it was, I mean, it was certainly, you know, I had to have surgery and that was a scary thing. I was young and, you know, and I, when my parents found out and they had me in the maternity ward, the first thing they said is, what is she doing in the maternity ward? Well, you know, I made up some story that I had a ovarian cyst or something. I don't know where I came up with that one, but because I didn't want my parents knowing that I'd gotten pregnant. And then years later, and I'm talking like a lot of years later, I told my father, and I remember him saying, you still were pregnant out of wedlock. So, but anyway, I'm veering off onto another topic here. But anyway, so yeah, they said some interesting things about sex and they were very frightened. And one of the reasons I think that my mother was frightened is that her mother had a 3-family home and the girl upstairs got pregnant and she did away with her pregnancy and she didn't survive it. And I'll just leave it at that without getting into, you know, obviously I'm not going to get into the details, they're a little too heavy, but all my mother could imagine is probably losing her daughter. I mean, I don't know because I never asked her. But anyway, so I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off onto a tangent.
But these are some of the ghosts
that
women bring into their parenting. And, you know, when we have daughters, it's really difficult as they go through every stage of growth not to see ourselves at that same time in life. And I still do it now. You know, I'm 67. My daughter's 35. And when she says something that feels off color to me or that feels so strident, you know, and there's, you know, laced with know-it-allism, I think about myself at 35 and I realize, oh yeah, this is very familiar. Mm-hmm. I remember that, you know. So when women come in to adolescence with their daughters, they're thinking about the very things that happened to them. And, you know, we do one of two things. We either resist or we repeat. Mm-hmm. And when we repeat, you know, sometimes the things that we repeat are just as damaging to our daughters as they were to us.
So elaborate on that a little bit. What are some things that a mother might repeat?
Well, for example, if you're sexual with somebody and you're not emotionally attached, it's going to be disastrous. People are going to call you a whore. Are you doing this? I mean, these are still things that I hear people say to their girls or talk with me about when their girls disclose to them they're sexually active. There's also this crazy idea, it's really fascinating to me, that girls are most likely to come to their mothers when they commence their sexual debut. And what really needs to happen is that girls need a relationship and an alignment, a personal alignment, with another responsible adult woman who can guide them, a godmother, an aunt, their mother's best friend, their next door neighbor, their guidance counselor at school. The idea that teenage girls are going to look to their mothers, who they are desperately, fervently individuating from and want to do anything but go to their mothers a lot of the time, mm-hmm. is kind of a kooky idea. But mothers hang on to it with an ironclad fist. Mm-hmm. They don't want this to be the case. They want their girls to come to them, but that's not how it works. And so it's really important that mothers, you know, sure, say to their girls, I want you to know I'm available to help you with this. And if you're not comfortable talking with me, I hope that you'll talk with Aunt Susie, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. your godmother or mm-hmm. something like that. Because since when does it have to be your mother?
Do you know Robin Buckley? She did a TED Talk. She gave her 13-year-old daughter a vibrator.
I know of the TED Talk. I don't know Robin Buckley, but yeah. I mean, I think it's a fabulous idea, and I don't think there's any reason that we should be so shocked or alarmed by it, because, first of all, it is still unbelievably mythic and predominant in its mythic proportions that women are orgasmic with penetrative sex.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of us are not.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually want to empower your girl and say, hey, by the way, there's plenty of opportunity for sexual enjoyment all on your own, and here's how you do it. What you do is a really good anatomy lesson
mm-hmm.
by introducing her to the nerve bed that's so rich and vast in the clitoris, explain her anatomy to her, and then give her a vibrator and remind her this is sex too.
As long as she doesn't get addicted to the vibrator.
There is no such thing. There's no such thing as vibrator rehab. I mean, let's get it straight here. Nobody has been sent to vibrator rehab. And if having an orgasm by using a vibrator is your most preferred and most enjoyable, there's no problem with it. There's no hazard. There's no medical contraindication to using a vibrator as much as you want.
Well, I have to shift here for just a second because I want to make sure that I let you in on this one, talking about men and birth control and so on and so forth. So I interviewed Robin. It was a long time ago. And a guy called up the station and complained that, you know, how could we be talking about such a thing? Now, I could see if it were on maybe at 5 o'clock at night. You know, kids are home from school. Maybe the mother's listening to the radio. Who knows? But a 9 o'clock show, I'm not so sure. Kids that maybe they're too young to be hearing about it. And obviously, Robin Buckley didn't think her 13-year-old daughter was too young to be hearing about it because she thought she should be using it. So, but anyway, I thought that was really interesting that it was a man who complained and not a woman.
Well, men complain about all kinds of preposterous things when it comes to women's sexuality. And it's largely because their sexual literacy is so low. I mean, their sexual literacy is coming from one place, and that's their erectile function. And that's their goal to achieve their own orgasmic response through thrusting. And that's often just one of the most tedious and boring things for plenty of women, and also incredibly repetitive and dull. And so it's really fascinating to me when I come up against men who gets oh so offended, and it's happened to me many times in my practice, when women say, look, I need a lubricant, or nope, I don't have an orgasm this way, I need this instead. I'm not sure what the fragility of the ego is in that regard,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to where is their curiosity?
Mm-hmm. You love that word. I've heard that a couple times. Already in the interview, I've heard you say curiosity twice. I like that.
Yeah. Where are people's curiosities about how their body works, how their partner's body works, how they will evolve through time? Because certainly what you enjoyed at 25 may not have anything to do with what you're capable of or what you enjoy when you're 55 or 65 or 75 or beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, you know, this is an evolutionary process. Teenagers are blessed in a way because they're following their mammalian biology that is reproductively driven. They're entering their most pronounced reproductive phase, and they're moving with their endocrine system, which is saying to them, you want to have sex all the time because as a mammal, your drive is to reproduce. And people forget this
mm-hmm.
when they're talking about themselves, and they certainly forget it when they're talking about their children.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that children are not somehow inherently sexual, it's really a false thing. It really is coming from people having not a clue
mm-hmm.
of what to do with that energy when it does show up.
And it will, and it does, and it will.
And it will.
What is your optimal goal when it comes to your daughter's emerging sexuality, really?
Shame reduction.
I was hoping you would say
That is really my ultimate goal for people, is shame reduction, because women carry so much shame and body hatred around with them for their entire lives. You know, women work on this every single day to feel good about the bodies they're in and to create a friendship with their body
mm-hmm.
that is actually enduring and can live through the slings and arrows of being human and dealing with illness and morbidity and childbirth and
mm-hmm.
the changes that brings.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a shame reduction model, and it's an embracing of what the body has to offer.
I would love to elaborate on this. We do need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to go right back to shame. So listeners, stay with us here. We will be right back. There's a certain feeling you get when you walk into Pioppi's. It's comfortable, familiar, like being welcomed by family. And that makes sense, because Pioppi's is a family business. Started right in Plymouth by Tony Pioppi after Prohibition, passed down through generations, and still run today by the same family. This is the kind of place where people take the time to help you, where questions are encouraged, where recommendations are personal because they actually get to know you. You might stop in for a bottle of wine and find yourself discovering a new favorite bourbon, checking out the craft beer wall, or browsing the humidor for hand-rolled cigars. For over 90 years, Pioppi has been about more than what's on the shelves. It's about pride, tradition, and taking care of the community they call home. Visit Pioppi's Package Store at 183 Court Street in Plymouth and follow them on Instagram and Facebook for new arrivals and events. So the next time you need a little whining, visit Pioppi's. Family owned, Plymouth rooted, no whining allowed.
Your pets are family. Take your dog to the Dog's Den in Pembroke. Your furry friend will go from smelling crummy to yummy because Leah at the Dog's Den really cares. Whatever your pet's needs are, from dematting to extra scissoring, the Dog's Den in Pembroke has your furry friends covered. So call the Dog's Den today at 781-826-7008 or visit thedogsdengrooming.com.
So your car's acting up again, huh? Squeaky brakes, weird noises, or that it's gonna quit on me vibe? Don't stress. Meineke has your back with locations in both Weymouth and Quincy. They'll fix it fast, keep it honest, and get you back on the road before your coffee even gets cold. Oil changes, tires, brakes, you name it, they do it. So stop stressing, start cruising, and leave the car drama to Meineke. Fast, friendly, and reliable. Meineke gets you back on the road in no time. For all your car care needs, trust Meineke. With two convenient locations in Quincy and Weymouth, stop by or call to make an appointment today. You'll be glad you did. I am speaking with Evelyn Resch, and we are talking about sex, young girls, and we're going to be getting into women, sex, power, and pleasure, hopefully, but we still have a lot to cover with this topic. So, Evelyn, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
All right. So let's talk about shame a little, because it's interesting. You know, a lot of mothers, you know, back in the day would say you should be ashamed of yourself. You know, that was a big thing. And I don't even know how a girl being shamed can get over that. I don't know how that even happens. I mean, how do you make that transition to being comfortable when you've always been told what you should be ashamed, or, you know, you're overweight and they body shame you? And how does that happen?
Well, I think that it happens by introducing girls, especially, to the pleasures of the body, the enjoyments that the body holds, and to keep reinforcing those things. And, you know, of course, a lot of folks come to me after the damage has been done.
Right.
And they're trying to regain a friendship with themselves and a sense of comfort in their somatic self, in their flesh. You know, they want to be able to feel better about what their body is and what it can do for them. And oftentimes what I do with people is I have them create lists of sensual pleasures because, and I talk about this in my book, Women, Sex, Power, and Pleasure, that sensuality is really your on-ramp to being sexual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to go from 0 to 60 and want genital involvement if you don't sort of pass through some other gate of sensual engagement. And so even something as simple as drinking coffee, you know, to me, this is a part of starting the day. I don't like to drink coffee out of a paper cup. You know, I try to avoid
I think we had this conversation in our last interview, but we should go through it.
Oh, we might have,
because I think we talked about wine stem glasses. But anyway, go ahead.
And, you know, and so I'm very dedicated to taking a low-intensity walk after breakfast just to start the day, just to welcome the day in. And I go out, I do have dogs, so that's you know, part of the initiative. But nonetheless, it's really about them walking, you know, giving me the opportunity to walk.
I thought you were going to say it gives them the opportunity to walk you.
Well, that too. Yes, they kind
of
walk
they
me.
They too, of
yeah.
course.
And so I go out, I enjoy the day. I'll go out no matter what the weather is. I'll find beauty in every place I can find it. Mm-hmm. And I think about the temperature of the air, and I think about what am I going to wear when I, you know, before I go out so I'm comfortable, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a real commitment to not eating things that aren't pleasurable and enjoyable. I mean, yes, I want them to be nutrient dense, but, you know, I certainly avoid at all costs that, I don't know if people are familiar with the term orthorexia, which is everything you put in your mouth has to be 100% nutrient dense.
Oh.
I mean, that is like some sort of food imprisonment.
And, no broccoli
and so
for this girl.
Things like that. Yeah, right. So, you know, so I work very hard at enjoying these things. I wear clothing mm-hmm. that's very specific in its fabric content.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't just put anything on because what's against my skin has, you know, your skin is your greatest organ,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly your greatest sexual organ.
Absolutely.
So if your skin isn't comfortable, nothing else is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very particular about the toothpaste I use and the soaps that I use, if any at all, and the creams and things like that. And being sensually engaged, to me, is both a disciplined practice,
mm-hmm.
it's an on-ramp to staying in touch with my sexuality, and it's also a way of reminding myself that there is nothing in the world that I can enjoy or appreciate or participate in without the body I have. And that is to be respected and cared for.
Absolutely. You know, as I'm listening to you, and I very, very much can relate to you talking about, you know, sensuality and enjoyment. I really, really can. I don't know if it's because I'm a Scorpio. I don't know. That's what they say. You know, it's the most sexual of the sun signs, but whatever it is, or the most sensual, actually. And I really believe that. But I'm not sure that a lot of women or people in general are necessarily in touch with that. You know, I mean, I think that in the United States, I think they're a little bit backward when it comes to that. You go to like Italy and everything is very, very sensual. And I mean, I can tell you, I don't know if I told you this the last time we interviewed, but I cannot, and I mean, I absolutely cannot drink a glass of wine in one of those goblets. It has to have a stem.
Oh, I remember that you ran across the street when your neighbor
that's right.
had some sort of gathering and handed you a wine goblet or something, and you just thought, oh no, this is not going to work. And you ran over to your house and you got a stem glass and poured your wine in that, and then you were able to drink it. But this is part of what I'm talking about.
I know
about
that's what you're talking. I mean, that's why I brought
yeah.
it up. That's what I'm talking about. I just absolutely cannot do it. And you know what? And I don't even think it's quirky. I had mentioned it to one of my neighbors at that party, and we had talked about a restaurant just down the street. She said, have you been there? I said, yes, but I would never, ever go back again. There's no way that I would go there because they don't have wine glasses with stems. So it was a couple months later, she sends me a text. I'm here right now, and they have wine glasses with stems now, so you're free to come. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. It is kind of funny, but it really isn't. It's just, it's being mindful of, you know, your sensuality. It's being mindful of what things feel like. You know, and I go into mm-hmm. a store and I'm looking at clothes. The first thing I want to do is I want to feel that fabric.
This is how I am as well.
Well, I can tell.
And
yeah.
I think part of it, there's no question that there's a cultural overlay. I grew up speaking Greek first.
Oh, okay.
And learned English when I went to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And my Hellenism and my Hellenic sensibilities are very pervasive throughout everything that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having a meal, you know, this is not a rush job. I'm not going to eat on the fly. I want to sit down. I want to enjoy what I'm eating. I don't want to feel as though I'm under pressure. You know, I want the food to be lovely and fragrant and enjoyable. All of those factors, I think, continue to train us. And you're absolutely right about, you know, what goes on in Europe versus or the Middle East in comparison to what goes on in the United States. And part of it is because the United States is so focused on productivity
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and youth.
Mm-hmm.
productivity and youth. And if somehow you're deviating from those directions, then you're not using your time wisely. I mean, if we just stop to think about so many other westernized nations, what their family leave policies are, which allows people to move into these important stages of life, or the fact that so many European nations offer 6 weeks of vacation right off the bat to everybody, every worker, things like that. You know, what it says is that living is its own art form that you need to invest in, and how you do it for yourself, you know, is highly individualized, of course. But nonetheless, you know, there's time that's allowed for people to cultivate and investigate beauty and sensuality and pleasure and ease, and moving at a much slower pace.
Well, we've really shifted into your book, Women, Sex, Power, and Pleasure. But, and so I want to absolutely continue that conversation. But before we shift into that completely, you know, Mother's Day is just around the corner. And one thing that I really wanted to cover in this interview is that some clinicians talk about a complicated dynamic between mothers and daughters around sexuality, where a daughter's emerging sexual identity can sit alongside a mother's experience of aging, shifting identity, cultural ideas about desirability and power. And we, the last time we spoke, we just touched on it very briefly, but I'd like to know how you see that tension play out in your work and how it shows up in real families. So I'd like to cover that piece first before we take our next break and then go into, go kind of back to women, sex, power, and pleasure.
Okay. So summarily, this is how I can present it to you. There's been a dramatic cultural shift in the last generation of people where, you know, midlife women now, generation of midlife women now, were born between 1975 and 1980. And if you go back in time, the first issue of Ms. Magazine was published in 1973. So by the time women who are now the age of midlife women, they were strongly influenced to postpone mothering, postpone their reproductive process, postpone marriage or partnership, and move into their professional lives. So a lot of these midlife women now have teenage girls at a time when historically you were way past that. And so what I see going on is that women who are midlife and going through the chaos of perimenopause, which can be very chaotic for some people, for all sorts of psychobiological reasons, you know, and cultural ones, what happens is they come into midlife at the same time that they have a mid-teenage-aged girl who may or may not look a lot like them. A perimenopausal woman is struggling with her sexuality. It is, based on research and based on my experience anecdotally, one of the times in life, other than the postpartum phase, where people are losing a lot of their sexual energy or they can't grab a hold of it because they have so many other competing interests. Meanwhile, they're living in a house with an incredible vixen who has her sexuality in the palm of her hand.
Right.
And to witness this at a time when you yourself are feeling that it's fleeting, or you can't grab a hold of it, or you're in a relationship with someone and the relationship is either in hospice and you just wish the person would drop dead already, or
Evelyn,
it's being renovated, or you're so anxious to move on in that joyous partnership is incredibly anger-producing for some people, and they take it out on their girl.
So is it ever expressed as jealousy, though, or is that just too simplistic a word for it?
No, it's interesting to identify it as jealousy. I don't, I mean, sure, I think some people can feel absolutely unequivocally jealous, but I think that it's a really toxic combination of the deepest sense of envy mixed with sorrow.
Sorrow,
and that's what I think women end up, you know, being polluted with, is this crazy combination of envy and sorrow.
Well, go talk about the sorrow a little bit, because I'm a little confused there with that one.
Well, the sorrow comes from the reflection.
Oh, the reflection. Okay, got it.
What it was like for them
at
that age.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and of course now, you know, our culture's teenage girls are very much more empowered than we were.
Right.
Well, I mean, I'm not a midlife woman. I'm beyond that. But certainly, teenage girls are much more empowered than their mothers were at that age. And their mothers know they may not be able to execute best measures, but they certainly know more about what the best measures are than their own mothers did. And so if they're having difficulty executing it, it makes it even harder.
Right.
Because then they feel like complete rotten eggs and total failures.
So what happens when that dynamic is never acknowledged? Do they express it indirectly through criticism or control? You know, what?
I think it's control. I think it's criticism. I think sometimes it can be an intense and really inappropriate over-involvement.
Right.
You know, in who people are going to date and what they're going to do and what's going to happen. And I want to say to mothers sometimes, back away. Back away. Is she possibly going to make a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, people make mistakes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how they learn from them.
Right.
This is not really your business. Or when I've seen people for gynecological care, you know, and they're 16 years old and their mother is coming in with them, answering all of my questions. And that's when I'll say, you know, how would it be if you just waited outside for us so that I could talk with so-and-so on her own? Because my contention is, if I have a 16-year-old girl who is interested in being sexually engaged, she is more than capable of talking with me on her own. She doesn't need her mother answering her questions for her. And in fact, that works against her being able to critically think about what would be most suitable for her.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing when you think about it. You know, I'm writing a memoir, and I ended up connecting with my very, very first boyfriend's best friend. This particular guy that was my first boyfriend, we were just 15 years old. He actually passed away, but we were in love and we were going steady and he bought me a ring and so on and so forth. Well, his friend would drive him to my house because his friend was 2 years older than him. It turns out my mother, this is just blows my mind. I'm still like reeling myself in from this conversation. My mother would tell his friend that, you know, her concerns about the two of us, and she was uncomfortable with how serious it was getting, and she was trying to talk him out of basically taking this boy to my house. She was trying to put a wedge in between the relationship. Many, many, many years later, I was visiting my parents in Florida, and my mother brings up this boy. And out of the blue, she said, you know, I was really so afraid. And, you know, I don't particularly remember the conversation. I mean, it had long passed. I was much older. I was, you know, whatever, 45 or so. But, you know, and then after talking to you, it's like, you know what? I don't know what she was afraid of. You know, I mean, she was always very, very rigid around no sex before marriage, and which, of course, was completely absurd. But even when I was 15 or 16. But anyway, I mean, so she was so scared that she went to great lengths to break us up. And that, to me, is just, that's kind of the epitome of trying to control an outcome. And of course, what happened is I just rebelled. But anyway, okay. So is there anything that you want to just add to that before we take a break and then get off onto getting back to, I know we kind of bumped back and forth with women's sex, power, and pleasure.
Well, yes. What I want to add to it is that I so often hear this really diminishing, critical, derisive thing when people report a love affair from that time of life as being, well, you know, it was just kid stuff. We were only 15. We were only 16. And yet, I can't tell you how many people in my practice who have either divorced or been widowed have ended up with that partner being 15 or 16. Because there is a way that there is such an essential quality to the love that goes on at that age, because it's unspoiled, you know, by society and the demands that your parents put on you, which is that you have to marry this type of person or you have to partner with this type of person. At that point, you're doing everything that your parents don't want you to do, and which often very intrinsically is really about your essential self. So when people say this to me, you know, my kid, you know, he or she has a little girlfriend, boyfriend, you know,
puppy love,
whatever direction.
Puppy love. Yeah.
I find that very insulting.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, sure, I mean, people in that age group can pair up with somebody that isn't an appropriate person or kind of a mistake or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if there's genuine love between two people at that age, I think it's kind of mean.
Well, you know, I kind of do too. And, you know, how many times do people go to their 50th class reunion and end up being, you know, the owner of our radio station? I can say it because he always calls himself an old coot. He's 85 years old. The hot ticket. But anyway, his wife passed away when he was, I forget now, but maybe like 65 or something. Mm-hmm. He immediately ended up reconnecting with his first love, and they are still together today. So, you know, because we had a little bit of a conversation before the show, and you had mentioned that about the young love, and it was really kind of sad to me. I thought, oh God, I wish he hadn't passed away. I feel like I would love to have been able to talk to him. As it turns out, you know, he came from a family of musicians, and he had written a song about me, and he reminisced about me for years after. He never, quote unquote, got over me, and I thought, oh wow, we were, you know, and I think we were just babies, but maybe not. So anyway, thank you for sharing that. And hopefully the mothers who have teenage daughters or grandmothers who have, you know, young grandchildren, maybe that would be an interesting conversation for a grandmother to have with her daughter. What do you think?
Oh, I think that there are many grandmothers who are stepping in and who are, you know, because one of the things I always say about grandparents and grandchildren is that they're united against the same enemy, you know, and so there is that skipped generation. You're not their parent.
Yeah.
You're their grandparent.
Right.
And what being an older adult affords you is an enormous amount of faith that things are going to work out because you've had a lifetime of doubting that. And then being given the proof that that's actually not true and that you can worry less.
All right, we're going to take our final break. And when we come back, I want to pick up where we kind of started a little bit ago with your book, Women, Sex, Power, and Pleasure. So listeners, stay with us here. More to come.
For all the special moments in life, for every milestone or event you want to capture forever, there's Cassandra's Photography. For 26 years, Sandy Sullivan has been making sure families have beautiful, artistic photos to remind them of the best times in their life, like souvenirs. Photos that never go out of style. Photos that will bring you back to a special moment in time when you and those you love and who love you view them. Sandy will help your personality shine through, putting you completely at ease. Whether it be for a senior portrait, headshot, family photo, or anything else you can capture in a lens. If it's an important photo, you want a professional behind the lens. And Sandy is nothing if not the consummate pro. Check out her work on Instagram by searching Cassandra's Photography or book an appointment today online at cassandrasphotography.com.
For 25 years, Andorra Salon has been making the South Shore feel beautiful. And today, it's also your destination for stylish women's fashion. I know because I wouldn't go anywhere else. Andorra is where I always feel my most beautiful. Discover a curated boutique filled with flattering, easy-to-wear pieces you'll love reaching for again and again. From casual chic to something a little more special, Andorra makes getting dressed feel effortless and fun. And when you're ready to complete the look, their experienced team offers expert hair and makeup services personalized just for you, all in one relaxing, welcoming space. Located at 82 Main Street in Kingston, Andorra delivers an elevated fashion and beauty experience designed to help you feel comfortable, confident, and completely yourself. Visit AndorraSalon.com today. That's AANDORA Salon, and be on your way to a new you. Shop the boutique, refresh your style, love the way you look. You'll be glad you did.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
All right, we are back, and you're listening to the Francesca Luca Show. I'm speaking with Evelyn Resch, and we are talking about everything to do with teenagers and sex, and now we're going to shift off into women, sex, power, and pleasure. So, Evelyn, in this last segment here, I would love to kind of hone in on a couple things. First of all, the biggest myth women have been sold about pleasure. I'd love to know what your thoughts are on that.
Oh, well, I think that, you know, hate to be sort of broad brush stroking here, but I do have to say that Catholicism has been very complicated when it comes to, you know, the pleasures of the flesh, and it has ruined the experiences of so many people.
Right.
And, you know, I feel so sad about that because, you know, the irony of this is that here we are as mammals, as human beings. We are here, earthside, for various lengths of time, and there is so much to enjoy. There is so much beauty. There is so much sensual. It's a feast of sensual pleasures. If you cultivate this kind of vision and this sort of quest in people. But if you keep saying to them that their bodies are dirty and that what they do with their bodies should be very utilitarian or, you know, reproductively focused or work focused, you start to create a mentality that's the antithesis of pleasure and that is actually very, it becomes very sensually atrophic. And you lose that muscle to be able to notice and see things. And pleasure has really potent medicinal value. So when people are struggling with something, certainly if they're struggling with a physical illness or they're struggling with depression or strife of any kind, what better place to turn to with no ill toward side effects than things that are pleasurable and enjoyable? Why are we taking those things away? And this includes how women often feel about their bodies. You know, I've said to people, certainly in heterosexual couples, you know, your body hatred is really offensive to him because your body is home to him. You not understand that every pound, every curve, every slope is home to him. And what he's saying to you by saying, I want to be sexual, in large part, and harping on it, is really the parenthetical digression there is, I am lonesome for you. I am lonesome for being home and feeling comforted. Why are you depriving me of this? And I've said to women, is there anything else that he enjoys as much as your body that you don't let him have? That's an interesting, both literal and rhetorical question.
Right. And why do you think that is?
Well, because I think it goes back to this idea of being ashamed of the bodies we're in. You know, I'll give you a perfect example of how I think this has just been jacked up. Yeah, the anti-aging movement. Oh, my God. I mean, I am just deluged with content around this, and I find it deeply, deeply unseating. I don't have any problem with aging, and, I mean, to me, I feel so fortunate. I'm not dead now. You know, I mean, hopefully I have plenty, well, you know, some time ahead of me. I have no interest in going back in time. I just don't. And I certainly don't want to do anything that could be physically detrimental to me in the effort of looking younger than I actually am.
Like, well, what are you referring to? Like
Botox, you know, facelifts, all these elective procedures that put women at risk, that are out-of-pocket expenses, that could be spent on so many more valuable things to feel good about who you are.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, you know, the other thing that happens is for a younger set, I mean, for women who are still menstruating, try going into a pharmacy and buying a product that is a feminine hygiene product. The entire top two shelves, you know, with so many of these products, are scented with chemicals that A, we don't need, and B, are dangerous, and C, imply that being menstruating women means that,
you're sick. They're sick.
We smell bad.
I don't know, but I remember when I was getting my period in the day, that was the time I wanted sex more than anything.
Well, for some people that's true because they have the complete relief of knowing that that's not a fertile time in their month.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it was.
I mean, whatever it is.
I don't think that's what it is at all. I think I was just damn plain old, I don't know, I'd get my period and I just know I would become like twice as worked up. You know, I just...
Well, for some people that's the case. It's, I mean, biologically, it's usually... Well, actually, it's really mid-cycle that you have a natural horniness because that's when you ovulate. By the time you're bleeding, you're not fertile at all. But some women may respond to that dramatic drop-off in hormones with a kind of sex drive. Either way...
Sex is really good to get rid of cramps, though, too.
Well, yes,
right?
Especially being orgasmic can definitely, having an orgasm can really relieve a lot of menstrual cramping.
I mean, we're talking about sexual health here, and it's just, it's so, right? It's crazy,
right.
But that's what it is. This is sexual health we're talking about, and it's just...
It is sexual health we are talking about. You are absolutely right. And then meantime, you go in to buy a menstrual pad, and you can't even find the ones that are not bleached. Which is terrible for your skin, especially if you've got blood on it and it's against your genitals, and that is heavily perfumed. Also terrible for your skin. So there are all of these messages out there that aging women aren't attractive, that women who are menstruating are malodorous. I mean, it's one thing after another. And then if you have the, I hate to use this word, but in terms of sexual health, if you have the misfortune of growing up in a very devout and observant Catholic family, it's pretty hard to miss the sins of the flesh speech.
Right. That's why you're right. I know, because I grew up with that, and it was just, my parents were quite clear. Yeah, you don't do that kind of thing. We'll have to, you know, sew
That's
you
right.
up, girl. Seriously, I mean, it was pretty, you know, it would be an absolute sin. Just, you know, just veering off for a quick second, I interviewed a woman, Meg Kissinger, who was a journalist, but also she wrote a memoir, While You Were Out, and it was about, she had both parents were mentally ill, and two of her seven siblings died by suicide. But it was not a morose show. It was very, very interesting. But, you know, it was in the very beginning of her book, it was all about how, you know, I mean, it was just, you could certainly not use birth control. It's be fruitful and multiply. And, you know, in those days, and these poor women are just popping out these kids and they're tired, they're depressed, they're overwhelmed. And you add mental illness to that. I mean, you just got a disaster. But, you know, that's the way it was. There was no such thing as birth control. When I was growing up, my mother certainly didn't use birth control. It was just, what did she call it? The rhythm method, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, but that's a Catholic family, you know, and either an Irish Catholic
But it's not just the Catholic family, Francesca. It is some Orthodox Jewish families. It is true in Mormon families. You know, it is certainly true in Amish communities. I mean, we have women who have very high what's called parity. In other words, the number of children they have. And their lives are focused around their reproductive capacity.
Good for them.
It's not about sexual pleasure. It's about producing more Orthodox Jews in that community or Amish in that community or, you know, Mormons. I mean, there's the number seven is very sacred, you know, seven children. That's kind of an ideal for plenty of Mormons that are extremely strict. And so, you know, for me, I keep going back to this idea, what are women's lives worth?
Right.
What are their bodies worth?
Right.
Why do we use sexuality? Why is sexuality? Why is rape? You know, one of the agents in war.
Right.
I mean, we see this all over the world.
I know it.
So it's very difficult, you know, when we address the concept of shame. Shame comes in lots of forms. I mean, we're talking about the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting that, you know, we have this massive access to information about sexuality, and yet so much of it is misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And people believe it because they're not thinking critically. And we certainly see this in terms of pornography, you know, that these are scripts that people believe are real as if they're documentaries about how people are having sex. This isn't real. It's not real at all. And a lot of it has a violent component to it. Not all of it, but again, you have to be a critical thinker in order to find the stuff that's really, you know, helpful or at all useful. And so, You know, there's a lot to, I mean, even though this is 2026, I mean, we haven't made the progress I wish we had, you know.
No, not in the United States anyway. I'm curious about something, what you think of this is like, what would you say is a quiet way that women give their power away without even perhaps noticing?
I think there's a lot of capitulation that goes on. You know, I think there's a lot of charity sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women giving a charitable contribution to their favorite charity, you know, when they don't really want to be giving,
mm-hmm.
Because it shuts their partner up.
Oh, it's sort of, they used to call that in the old days, the mercy F.
Yes, right.
Right? I think there's a lot of that.
And I think the way that women give it up is that they don't actually explore their own sexuality in such a way that they can then introduce this to their partner and say, look, if we're going to be sexual, this needs to be a collaborative effort. This is not all about you.
Right.
This is not all about your pleasure and your, you know, reported orgasmic retention problem.
Yeah.
You know, which is what we hear from men all the time, is that, you know, I just can't stand it, you know, and what we'll hear is, well, you know, men, I mean, they have to have it. And I'm like, yeah, sex is not something you have to stay alive. And if you really need to have an orgasm, then you need to learn how to masturbate. And stop blaming your, you know, female partner about it.
No wonder so many women, you know, they sort of leave their bodies,
you
know,
they do.
when they're in that kind of a situation. And then the men complain that it just, they're, you know, dead fish. Well, you know, it's probably because it's like, it's a requirement rather than, you know, but that's a whole nother thing. You know, we could do an entire show on that. So,
yeah, it's really an interesting thing. And I just, what is very astounding to me is just that lack of curiosity. Why is there not a conversation that involves more curiosity as opposed to blame and rejection and demand? There's so many ways of approaching a complicated topic and asking someone a simple question. Well, tell me, what is it that you do like? And why she likes it, actually irrelevant, and sometimes maybe none of your business, and maybe she can't answer the question. But you haven't even asked her, what is it that you do like? And here's the other problem. Sometimes men will do that. I mean, men that I work with will get to that point and they'll do that. And then they stop doing it and they go back to what they've always known. And that's when women get really mad.
You know,
because they feel like essentially what they're doing is a sexual tutorial every single time. And they get resentful. And who can blame them?
Right. So, Evelyn, we need to finish up now. But before we do, I'd like you to finish this sentence. You're not going to have the sex you want until you stop blank.
Giving in to someone else's demands.
Absolutely fabulous. Evelyn Resch, thank you so much for being a guest on the show tonight. I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. If you missed part of this show, you can hop on over to my iTunes page and listen there. You've been listening to the Francesca Luca Show, Love Bites After Dark, and we will see you next time. So thanks for tuning in.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
So your car's acting up again, huh? Squeaky brakes, weird noises, or that it's gonna quit on me vibe? Don't stress. Meineke has your back with locations in both Weymouth and Quincy. They'll fix it fast, keep it honest, and get you back on the road before your coffee even gets cold. Oil changes, tires, brakes, you name it, they do it. So stop stressing, start cruising, and leave the car drama to Meineke. Fast, friendly, and reliable. Meineke gets you back on the road in no time. For all your car care needs, trust Meineke. With two convenient locations in Quincy and Weymouth, stop by or call to make an appointment today. You'll be glad you did.
Your pets are family. Take your dog to the Dog's Den in Pembroke. Your furry friend will go from smelling crummy to yummy because Leah at the Dog's Den really cares. Whatever your pet's needs are, from dematting to extra scissoring, the Dog's Den in Pembroke has your furry friends covered. So call the Dog's Den today at 781-826-7008 or visit thedogsdengrooming.com.
There's a certain feeling you get when you walk into Pioppi's. It's comfortable, familiar, like being welcomed by family. And that makes sense, because Pioppi's is a family business. Started right in Plymouth by Tony Pioppi after Prohibition, passed down through generations, and still run today by the same family. This is the kind of place where people take the time to help you, where questions are encouraged, where recommendations are personal, because they actually get to know you. You might stop in for a bottle of wine and find yourself discovering a new favorite bourbon, checking out the craft beer wall, or browsing a humidor for hand-rolled cigars. For over 90 years, Pioppi has been about more than what's on the shelves. It's about pride, tradition, and taking care of the community they call home. Visit Pioppi's package store at 183 Court Street in Plymouth and follow them on Instagram and Facebook for new arrivals and events. So the next time you need a little whining, visit Pioppi's. Family owned, Plymouth rooted, no whining allowed.